to me your secrets. Show me your nightmares. All cats are gray in the dark, dear. Whether or not you dare.
Welcome to All Cats Are Gray in the Dark. I'm your host, April Simmons. This podcast contains true cases of graphic violent crimes and other stories of a dark nature. Please be advised that due to the subject matter and violent, sometimes sexual content and obscene language, this podcast is not for children or the faint of heart.
Come here!
Here we are again.
Yay! Yay!
We're going to do another cult episode. It's been a while, so I felt like it was time for us.
It's been a while.
No. Just no. I don't even know who sings that, but it sounds like some Nickelback kind of crap.
It's like Stained or... Yeah, I have no
same
idea.
Difference, sure. Same difference to me. Then.
Sounds about right.
Okay, so mostly we're going to be talking about the Order of the Solar Temple. And then we're going to talk very briefly about one called the Brethren. That's going to be our honorable mention. The Order of the Solar Temple, and then it has the French pronunciation. You want to do that for me, or do you know how to do that?
Where is it?
Right at the top.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know that shit. Ordre du Temple Solaire.
I don't know. Or simply the Solar Temple. It's a cult and religious sect that claims to be based upon the ideals of the Knights Templar. OTS was founded by Joseph de Mambro and Luc Giraud in 1984 in Geneva, as some other French stuff. And later it was renamed to the Order of the Solar Temple. And that's the English one because I'm not going to even try the French one. Some historians allege that the Solar Temple was founded by the French author Jacques Breyer, who established a sovereign order of the Solar Temple in 1952. In 1968, a schismatic order was renamed the Renewed Order of the Solar Temple under the leadership of the French right-wing political activist Julien Origues. The OTS is probably most notorious because it's associated with a series of murders and mass suicides that claimed several dozen lives in France, Switzerland, and Canada in 1994 and 1995.
Why have you never heard of
this? Yeah, no, that's what I was thinking when I was like, I thought this was maybe a lot earlier than that. And then when I started reading that, I was like, wait, what? How have we not heard of that?
Yeah.
Like, I was a freaking teenager during that time, you would think. But apparently it didn't make as high news as whatever else was going on at that time.
Yeah. According to Peronic, a pseudonym of Temple member Robert Chabrière, in his book Pourquoi la Resurgence de l'Ordre du Temple, tome premier Le Corps, Why a Revival of the Order of the Solar Temple, Volume 1, The Body. That's what that said. The aims of the Order of the Solar Temple included establishing correct notions of authority and power in the world, an affirmation of the primacy of the spiritual over the temporal, assisting humanity through a great transition, preparing for the second coming of Christ as a solar god king, and furthering a unification of all Christian churches in Islam. The group reportedly drew some inspiration for its teaching from British occultist Aleister Crowley, who headed the Order of the Eastern Temple from 1923 until his death in 1947, and the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, a 19th century Rosicrucian order Crowley belonged to briefly. Both occult groups had a grade system somewhat similar to the Solar Temple. Another Rosicrucian group, the Rosicrucian Fellowship, headed by Max Heindel, also mentioned that the Rosicrucians worship Christ as the solar logos. Raised from the Cross magazine, said that shit. Although this is not Orthodox Christian doctrine, there were solar temple lodges in Morin Heights and Saint Anne de la Parade, Quebec, Canada, as well as in Australia, Switzerland, Martinique, and other countries. The temple's activities were a mix of early Christian identity, UFO religion, and New Age philosophy using variously adapted Freemason rituals. Jarrett was interested in attractive, wealthy, and influential members, and it was reputed that several affluent Europeans were secret members of the group.
Yay.
That was a lot of words.
Yeah, and it, I was like, how many more times can they make you say Rosicrucian?
Yeah, I know.
Like, what? How many times is that mentioned? According to the literature of the OTS, the central authority was the Synarchy of the Temple, whose membership was secret. Its top 33 members were known as the Elder Brothers of the Rosy Cross, an alternative name for the Rosicrucians. Were headquartered in Zurich, Switzerland. The Council of the Order formed lodges that were run by a regional commander and three elders. Progression in the order was by levels and grades, with three grades per level, the levels being the Brothers of Parvis, the Knights of the Alliance, and the Brothers of the Ancient Times in ascending order. There were many organizations associated with the OTS, including the International Arcadia Sciences and Tradition, Arcadia Clubs, Menta Clubs, Agata Clubs, and Atlanta Clubs, all of which offered the teachings of Luc Giraud both to the general public and privately to OTS members. The lodges had altars, rituals, and costumes. Members were initiated in each stage of advancement in ceremonies, which included expensive purchases, jewelry, costumes, regalia, and the payment of initiation fees. In other words, they sold you this idea that you were better off and you learned more secrets and stuff the further you progressed. And then they made you buy your way into progressing upwards.
Kind of like Scientology.
Yeah. During ceremonies, members wore crusader-type robes and were to hold in awe a sword, which Dumombro said was an authentic Templar artifact given him 1,000 years ago in a previous life. And here's the next part that actually gets a little fucked up. Because this is about all of the stuff that they did. Get ready.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
All right. In October 1994, Tony Dutoit's infant son, Emmanuel Dutoit, age 3 months, was killed at the group's center in Morin Heights, Quebec. The baby had been stabbed repeatedly with a wooden stake. All right, I quit. Goodbye. Thanks. It is believed that Dumombro ordered the murder because he identified the baby as the Antichrist described in the Bible. He believed that the Antichrist was born into the order to prevent Dumombro from succeeding in his spiritual aim. Subsequently, apparent mass suicides and murders were conducted at Chiri and Salvin, two villages in western Switzerland, and at Morin Heights. 15 Inner Circle members committed suicide with poison, 30 were killed by bullets or smothering, and 8 others were killed by other means. In Switzerland, many of the victims were found in a secret underground chapel lined with mirrors and other items of Templar symbolism. The bodies were dressed in the order's ceremonial robes and were in a circle, feet together, heads outward, most with plastic bags tied over their heads. They had each been shot in the head. The plastic bags may have been a symbol of the ecological disaster that would befall the human race after the OTS members moved on to Sirius. It's also possible that these bags were used as a part of the OTS rituals and that members would have voluntarily worn them without being placed under duress. There's also evidence that many of the victims in Switzerland were drugged before they were shot. Other victims were found in 3 ski chalets. Several dead children were lying together. The tragedy was discovered when officers rushed to the sites to fight the fires that had been ignited by remote-controlled devices. Farewell letters left by the believers stated that they believed they were leaving to escape the hypocrisies and oppression of this world. Lord, so they got, like, remote-controlled fires or bombs, I'm guessing. Shooting, yeah. Smothering, drugging, stabbing. That was a whole lot.
Stabbing a baby. And I just wanted to say, it doesn't say in this, but when I was doing the research, you know, he claims that the baby was the Antichrist. But in reality, they believe the father of the baby was talking shit about them and stuff. Even though he was a member, it was believed that he was getting ready to leave and that they had found out he had talked about them and things like that. And that's why they took it upon themselves to punish him by killing the baby.
Yeah, that's messed up.
Mm-hmm.
So messed up.
Yep. A mayor, a journalist, a civil servant, and sales manager were found among the dead in Switzerland. Records seized by the Quebec police showed that some members had personally donated over $1 million to Dimambro. Another attempted mass suicide of remaining members was thwarted in the late 90s. All the suicides and murders and attempts occurred around the dates of the equinoxes and solstice in some relation to the beliefs of the group. Another mass death incident related to the OTS took place during the night between the 15th and 16th December of 1995. On the 23rd, 16 bodies were discovered in a star formation in the Vercors Mountains of France. It was found later that two of them shot the others and then committed suicide by firearm and immolation. One of the dead included Olympian Edith Bonlieu, who had competed in the women's downhill at the 1956 Winter Olympics. On the morning of the 23rd March 1997, five members of the OTS took their own lives in St. Casimir, Quebec. A small house erupted into flames, leaving behind five charred bodies for the police to pull from the rubble. Three teenagers, 13, 14, and 16, the children of one of the couples that died in the fire, were discovered in a shed behind the house, alive but heavily drugged. So I guess they drugged them for them to die too, but they somehow made it out.
Yeah.
Guessing. Michel Tabachnik, an internationally renowned Swiss musician and conductor, was arrested as a leader of the Solar Temple in the late 90s. He was indicted for participation in a criminal organization and murder. He came to trial in Grenoble, France, or Grenoble, I don't know how you say that, during the spring of 2001 and was acquitted. French prosecutors appealed against the verdict and an appellate court ordered a second trial beginning October 24th, 2006. He was again cleared less than 2 months later in December.
Probably because he got members.
Mm-hmm. Helping him out.
Your turn.
The Order of the Solar Temple was also based in Spain, especially in the Canary Islands. In 1984, the founder of the OTS, Luc Jouret, lectured on the island of Tenerife. The leader of the order's branch in Spain lived on the south of the island. The only Spaniard who died in the suicide of the Order of the Solar Temple was a barber from Tenerife. In 1998, a sect was suspected of plotting ritual suicide in the Teide National Park. Both Spanish and German police initially linked the group to the Order of the Solar Temple.
That's pretty much the basics of the story. And then I've, of course, included what I thought was some interesting facts. And some of it may be a little repetitive, but I included it anyway because I like to try to find stuff that's just not your... you know, basic story to that. But you guys already, if you've been listening to this, you already know that. So here's some interesting facts about the Order of the Solar Temple. Among the many things that Giraud claimed in front of elite members of the cult was that in a previous life, he was a member of the Knights Templar. He also told them that he was the third reincarnation of Jesus Christ. Using the authority this gave him, Giraud would choose female members of the cult to engage with sexually before ceremonies. He claimed that they gave him the spiritual strength to do his holy duties.
Yeah. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Several days before the first mass suicide, Dimambro recruited 12 of his closest and highest ranked followers. They recreated their version of the Last Supper, the biblical final meal attended by Jesus Christ and his apostles. In this version, Dimambro took on the role of Christ and led his apostles through the traditional dinner. These inner circle members were aware of the forthcoming murder plans.
Douches. Joseph Dimambro was in charge of the cult's rituals and ceremonies. He led prayers and guided members through meditation sessions in order to emphasize his importance in the cult. You know, by saying that Jesus isn't good enough, apparently.
Jesus is my friend.
And his own status as holy, he told members that his son was conceived through theogamy, or marriage with the gods. He also stated that his daughter was conceived immaculately, like Mary's pregnancy with Jesus.
Okay.
Among the cult's zanier beliefs was that life on Earth was ending. As a result, the group's goals were initially based around survivalist behavior and doomsday prep. The members in Canada even started an organic farm that's still in operation. Members also stockpiled food, weapons, and ammunition to prepare for the impending ecological disasters, which they posited would be caused by volcanoes. Of course, this wasn't proving to be the most sustainable of messages in keeping members invested. With their credibility, both internally and externally, starting to waver, a new credo emerged. The new message emphasized that life on Earth was an illusion. Elders told members that their only hope lay in shedding their earthly bodies in order to be reborn on an unnamed planet orbiting the dog star Sirius, thus their eventual fiery end. I don't know. I mean, I feel like if the world's gonna end and you're like literally like helping make a survivalist plan, I'd be more inclined to that than like you gotta die to go to a new planet.
Yeah, I know, right. I just think it's odd because, you know, most of the other ones are like, it's going to be aliens or it's going to be this or it's going to be that. They're just like, the world's going to end from volcanoes. Like, okay. Or sometimes it's, you know, meteors or, you know, like
Halibop or whatever.
Asteroids.
Get a fly away on Halibop.
Okay. But I just thought it was odd that of all the things that they could come up with, or they could be more vague about it and just be like, the world's in the end. And I would be inclined to join them on that note. Like, if it was like, hey, we know that the end of the world is coming, we've seen all these signs, we're going to get ready for it, I'd be more inclined to join that cult than somebody being like specific stuff like that.
Yeah, when they start spouting, like, I'm Jesus reincarnated and a Knights Templar and this
and we're gonna aliens. Be reborn.
And sleep with me because it gives me good spiritual juices.
Yes. Spiritual juices.
That's them red flags we've been talking about.
Yeah. DeMombro's son, Eli, started to question the family organization the older he became. Really? Cool. Cool. Mm. Good for Eli. When news came out that visions presented to the members were actually holograms and special effects faked by Eli's father. He started to get vocal about his suspicion that things weren't on the level. Several people quit the cult in response, and Eli walked away from the family business. This was, of course, a huge blow to DeMombro's credibility, and the plans for transition, aka mass suicide, came soon after. Eli's body was among those found in the mass suicide. However, so either his defection was misreported, never allowed to take place, or his participation in the suicide was against his will.
Yeah, more than likely that.
Yeah, for real. So, what did you think about this cult?
They just kept evolving. It sounds like the original versions maybe weren't nearly as bad. They were more like a sweet club of fancy people, and then it just got worse as time went on.
But from the very beginning, they had all these secrets and stuff, and you had to pay money to go for higher up to be in on the secrets.
Yeah.
Which just makes me wonder, what's the secrets? Like, is it really worth it, or did you pay all this money and get there and they'd be like, I'm Jesus?
Yeah.
And you're like, really? That's lame. Yeah. Like, I got paid for, you know, a couple hundred grand for this. That's what the hell. Anyway, that concludes us talking about that particular cult. And the honorable mention today is the Brethren.
The Brethren.
The Brethren. And it's, of course, garbage, as all of them are.
Yeah.
So you go first. Tell us some. I just put a little bit of info together on them because they're honorable mention, and I don't want to go too far into that.
Right. Yeah. So, Jimmy T. Roberts, also known as Brother Evangelist Roberts, son of a former Pentecostal minister, created the movement around 1971, drawing together followers of the Jesus movement across the United States. And then my dogs barked a whole bunch.
They're like, that one's garbage. That dude's garbage. They're telling you their disapproval.
Yeah. Oh my God. Why? Roberts had become convinced that mainstream churches were too worldly and wished to create a wandering discipleship patterned on the New Testament apostles. He began recruiting a core of followers in Colorado and California.
Colorado.
I know, I have to say it that way because of the stand. And California. At first, they adopted a communal lifestyle. Jim Roberts died on December 6, 2015 in Denver, Colorado at the age of 76. And he made his own bread. I'm kidding. He didn't. Well, he might have. His cause of death is listed as metastatic adenocarcinoma of unclear primary. Wow, thanks for that. Upon Jim Roberts' death, the leadership role of the organization was passed to Jerry Williams, a.k.a. Brother Hatsayer.
The beliefs were prominently millenarian and apocalyptic. Of course they were. Centered on the teaching that humanity is in the end times and that members must purify. I'm seeing a common thread in all of these. The members must purify themselves in preparation for the end of the world. This movement directs new members to sell their possessions and break ties with their families as a necessary part of earning salvation. Any finances generated are distributed according to need. For instance, money might be used for material to sew clothing, travel expenses, or cooking spices. In some cases, new members' money was given to older members, but in other cases, it was kept by the individual to do what they would with it. Yeah.
All right. The Brethren live as itinerants. They acquired the nickname the Garbage Eaters. Hey, I get why you say garbage. After being observed collecting discarded food from dumpsters, although some members at times don't bathe too frequently, especially when camping out, the group has no laws or rules against bathing or using soap, shampoo, deodorant, etc. Although some Although some members refuse medical treatment, other members have accepted medical treatment or dental work. During the 1970s, members wore monk-like habits. Men wear long beards and women dress modestly in long dresses and long hair. Women and men eat separately and new members are restricted in all contact with the opposite sex. Women and men have clearly defined roles. Immediately on joining the group, women begin sewing their own clothing. I kind of want to sign up for that. I want to learn how to sew. The Brethren essentially disallow marriage by single group members, maintaining that the hour is too late. Children of couples who join the group are not allowed to play. Laughing, dancing, and other forms of celebration are to be reserved for the return of Yeshua, Jesus. Graven images are not allowed, and any images on products found are covered to protect the members from seeing them. Coloring is allowed, but not creating images and singing is part of nightly gatherings. The Brethren also maintain that there is no actual sacrament of the Eucharist, and that the bread and wine should be understood only as a metaphor for fellowship. Members are divided into pairs, or occasionally three, and sent off to preach. The teams regather periodically for fellowship to hear Brother Evangelist Roberts and to be assigned new companions and their next destination. The hierarchy is minimal. Directly under Roberts are a group of elders. Members are designated as older brothers or middle brothers according to the time served in the group. Honestly, a lot of that sounded like the denomination we grew up with.
I know, it's like, you're not allowed to have fun.
Yep. No dancing. Anyway,
no dancing. A highly publicized case of deprogramming in Arkansas during 1975 brought unwelcome attention to the Brethren. Beginning in the late 70s, stories written by members such as Rachel Martin also began appearing. Coverage, often negative, continued to surface in the media. The group dropped out of sight around 1980 after several police raids and arrests in the 70s. Roberts ordered members to keep their locations secret and not to communicate with their families. The members fear being arrested or kidnapped at the request of distraught families, with instances reported as recently as 1998. Families of members have asserted that their relatives are moved about to keep them from reestablishing familial contact. Parents whose children have disappeared into the movement have formed a group called the Roberts Group Parents Network for mutual support and aid in locating missing members. In 2011, Evangeline Grigo's documentary film, God Willing, explored the experiences of parents trying to reestablish contact with children who had joined the Brethren and disappeared. The film has since aired on PBS stations in the U.S. And by the way, both of these lunatic ass cults are still active.
Wow, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, and people are still trying to get, and I've heard of this in several other cults too, where, you know, they do things to prevent you from connecting back with your family. And there's a lot of advocacy groups that try to like track them down for people and stuff like that. Yeah. And there's a pretty high percentage of missing persons that, you know, have been found to be
cult members.
Run away with a cult or something and just didn't contact their parents anymore.
Yeah.
I find that odd. Like, even though I don't really get along with our parents that well, like, I just can't imagine just disassociating from, like, everybody and running away with a cult. Like, I can't comprehend that. Because, like, with how close, you know, we aren't close with our parents, but, like, can you imagine me just running off and not contacting you or Nancy or something like
that? No, I'd be like, what the heck's going on? Akil. Yeah.
So, I guess that's just hard for me to understand. Like, how you could just throw away everything. And in a lot of these cases, you know, the parents will say, like, we didn't really have a problem. Like, there was no issue between us that I knew of. You know, like, that we, you know, my son used to contact me every day. Like, we talked on the phone at least every day. And then they just disappeared and never talked to me again. I'm like, how does that happen? But I guess it's down to like brainwashing or whatever. But, and I feel like only certain types of people do end up in that situation. And I feel like that's not us. And that may sound snooty. I'm like, that would never happen to us because we're not that fucking gullible, I guess you could say.
Yeah. No, I question even close personal friends that I've had my entire life. I'm like, why did they do that? This is weird. Maybe it's this, you know, and then I have like a far-fetched, crazy-ass plan in my head. You know, like, they're tricking me.
Okay. Do you have any shout-outs or recommends this week?
I don't know. I finished Lock and Key. That was good.
I'm caught up anyway. Yeah, I'm not caught up on that.
And I'm still watching The Crown. That's all I got.
Okay. Well, we actually went back and watched season 3 of True Detective because we'd watched the first 2 seasons and then we never got around to watching the 3rd season. So we watched it this past week and it was really freaking good.
I haven't watched past that first one.
I would say they're all good, but they're not as good as the first season, really.
Yeah.
We also went, both of us went to, the whole fam went to see the new Ghostbusters, which was awesome.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did do that.
And I got to, and then basically, it was good. And then, of course, I'm still listening to This Is Actually Happening, and I just got to an episode tonight that's just flipped my shit. It's a girl that has dissociative identity disorder. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah.
What used to be known as multiple personalities. And oh my Lord, it's like she was raised by parents that are traffickers. And so she was sexually abused pretty much as far back as she can remember. And she was sold off to people pretty much daily.
Jesus.
From the age of like 3. Yeah. So she created all these multiple personalities to deal with the fact that she was being abused sexually and physically every day.
Yeah.
Till she was in her 20s, I believe. It was in her 20s before she got out. And it was just like horrifying. So definitely don't listen to that if you have trigger issues, because she goes into lots and lots and lots of detail about the things that have happened to her and about specific of her personalities and, you know.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting. It's very interesting because you most of the time people, there's an attitude when it comes to DID that it's bullshit, basically. You know, like there's in this attitude. But in this case, it's like you can almost see that, like, this is the reason why this happened. She created those identities in herself to cope with that stuff, you know, and it's really, I find it fascinating. Yeah. Also, I just had to shout out because I actually went, I hadn't looked in our stats in a while. The only two states that have not listened to us is Delaware and North Dakota. So, okay, I'm giving y'all a shout out right now. Delaware, North Dakota, you need to come listen to us because, mm-hmm. and I don't know how they will hear.
Need to collect the states.
Yeah. So, yes, we need to collect all the states, and you're the only ones that aren't listening to us. Delaware, North Dakota, come on, come listen. Anyway, I think that's all. I had a bunch of shout outs that time. I guess on to our alternate endings. Today's alternate endings is movies that we never want to watch again.
Yay.
So you go first. I don't remember who went first. Last
yeah. Number five for me is Atonement.
I don't think I ever watched that. Was it that bad?
It's hard to explain without giving too much away, but you walk away so, so angry. Right. And Cersei Ronan, or however you pronounce her name, she's a child in the movie and, you know, at the time of filming. And she's one of the most hated movie characters in the world.
Yeah.
Like, I see her on that character on so many lists because of that movie, but it's got James McAvoy and Keira Knightley in it, so. Mm. It's a good movie, it's just, you come away really mad.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of movies like that for me.
Yeah. That's pretty much the majority of the ones on my list, is just walking away really pissed off.
Yeah. My number five is Too Fast, Too Furious. I don't really like plain old action type movies or movies with a bunch of car chases or, you know, just anything like that. And like, I like that genre. If I can get down with some action, if there's like sci-fi involved or stuff, I need more to it than just action. And like the Fast and the Furious movies just never did it for me in general. But then there was a time period of my life where I was doing, mystery shopping, and I got paid to go to the movies. And
I remember that.
Yeah, I've seen Too Fast, Too Furious probably a couple of dozen times at the theater because I was getting paid to do it, and I watched the same couple of movies over and over again in a short span of time because I didn't have many options. So that's one I would like to never, ever watch again. That's it. That's all.
Yeah, that made a lot of sense, though. Number four for me is Bird Box.
Really?
It wasn't really like a bad movie, but I feel like it was so hyped up to me that I'm just like, well, that was a disappointment. And then it's just one of those, I wouldn't even like, you know, sometimes you'll watch a movie you didn't really care for because someone else wants to. Like that one, I would like probably even be like, no, I'm good. I'm going to like not hang out with you now. For this. You know, like, I just wouldn't even bother. It wasn't entertaining enough for me.
Yeah. I gotcha. My number four is Girl on the Third Floor, which is that one that I was talking about a few weeks back where it's like jizz in every scene.
Yum.
That made me uncomfortable, but there's also one, without giving anything else away, there is one scene where an animal gets hurt. And that's a big no-no.
No.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it's a big no-no. I'm just like, nope. So, yeah, like, I'm not going to watch that ever again. Mostly because of the animal theme.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my number four. What's yours?
Number three for me? Cats.
I never watched it.
I know. There's quite a lot that I've never watched just because I know I probably don't want to watch it, but Cats is one, just my curiosity got the best of me, and I'm like, all right, everybody that says this thing sucks. Like, I've got to watch.
Did your curiosity kill the cat?
Yes, it killed the cats. It could have been worse, but it was just weird. It was too weird. Like, the giant sets with, like, human standy-up cats, and they got rid of their buttholes. They were supposed to have buttholes, and then that didn't happen. Boo. I mean, other than the song Memories, that movie was horrible, and I will never bother watching it again.
Yeah. Number three for me is a movie that I probably mentioned another time because it was one of the Halloween movies, like the movies we watched during Halloween when we were watching a whole bunch of horror movies. And mm-hmm. James picks this one, and I will never let him live it down. Possession is a movie from 1981. It's like I think it might be French. I'm not sure. I can't remember. It's a foreign film. And it's very artsy. It's a horror movie, but it's about a couple that are basically divorcing. But it's one of those movies where you can't decipher what's real and what's not. Like, whether they just imagining is happening or what is not. And it gets really confusing and it's really fucked up and weird. And I kind of odd. Some moments are just plain awkward. Like, I was like, this is one of the most uncomfortable movies I've ever watched. I will never watch it again.
Nice.
It's really highly rated on like horror movie lists, and I don't understand why. Like, I'm just like, I don't get it. I guess it's just too over my head or something, because I was just like, I don't. Yeah.
I don't like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, number two for me is Anger Management.
I think I blocked that movie out of my brain because I know I watched it, but I don't remember anything about it.
I just remember it was one of those movies where shitty things were happening to someone, like, to the point where it's like, why are people letting this happen? Why are they doing this? Like, it was that level, like, those are the things that are really frustrating for me. It's just like, it's very evident things are wrong, and I, like, the movie just keeps piling it on. And it's the same with my number one as well. And I'm just like, I don't need this stress in my life. Like, yeah. I will specifically avoid this amount of stress. No thanks. Never want to watch it again. And I don't remember it being an exceptionally decent movie anyway.
My number two is the Garbage Pail Kids movie. I don't know if you remember that.
I've never actually seen it.
We watched it as kids, so you probably did see it, and you probably blocked it out because it's that fucking terrible.
Yeah.
Like, I actually loved it when I was younger, and I'd watch it pretty much anytime it was on cable or something. When we had cable anyway, which was kind of spotty here and there. But it's just a really gross movie. But I mean, if you've seen the Garbage Pail Kids card, you kind of know going in that it's gonna be gross, but it's just really gross. Like, characters with snot hanging out of their nose the whole movie, you know, like, just it's gross. And it's like, I loved it as a kid, but I cannot go back and watch it now. Like, I'm scared to, honestly.
Yeah.
Your turn, number one.
Punch Drunk Love. So two Adam Sandler movies at the top.
Like, two of the only serious ones.
Yeah. No thanks. Get out of that genre, Adam Sandler. You don't belong. I don't know. It was another one of those that a bunch of horrible things happened to his character, and like, he doesn't deserve it, and he can't make it any better, and all the characters around it, like, are bad too. Like, it just gets worse and worse. Can't handle it.
Yep. My number one, and this is going to take some explanation, so I'm sorry. Revenge is a 2017, like, basically horror, like a torture horror type movie, where this chick gets, something happens to her, and she decides to get revenge on a bunch of dudes. It's that kind of movie. It's a chick revenge movie, you know what I mean? I guess that would be probably sexist for me to say the word chick when I'm saying that, but... It's a female revenge movie. But the problem that I have with it, it wasn't a bad movie. It really wasn't. But there was so much going on, like, pretty much everybody in the whole movie gets some type of injury at some point. And she gets like a piece of glass stuck in her foot and like just all this really painful shit happens. And I basically, because of this movie, I found out that I have a condition called mirror touch synesthesia. And I'd had no idea that nobody else felt this, but I was discussing it with my husband. Because it's like, this movie is causing me physical pain. Like, it hurts for me to watch this stuff happening. And apparently that not everybody has that. It's very rare. Like, I can watch a video, like a YouTube video of somebody getting hurt, and I will feel not that exact pain because, yeah, obviously it's not happening to me. But I feel pain in whatever area that the person I'm watching on TV or real life or whatever, if I see it visually, I can feel a pain in that place. And so that movie, I will never ever, nobody will ever convince me to watch that movie again, because just the scene with the glass in the foot, like, I thought I was dying. I had to turn away and stop watching for a minute. And usually I'm okay with gore, but it's where you can actually see someone experiencing physical pain, it bothers me.
Yeah.
So that concludes that list.
So what's that one with like James Franco cutting his arm off? Like, don't watch that.
I don't know. Is it the one where he's out in the wilderness or something?
Yeah, and it's like based on a true story or whatever.
Yeah, no, I haven't watched it, and I probably won't. I probably, like, if I know ahead of time that it's going to be that kind of thing, usually I will not watch it because I just don't dig. Yeah. That's also the reason I don't like this. I saw, like, the first two Saw movies, and then I never watched another one because it's not that they're terrible movies. It's that it causes me pain to watch that kind of thing. Like, so, like, the torture horror genre is just one that I don't dig.
Yeah.
So that concludes this episode. Tune in next time, which is 5 minutes from now for us, because we're
recording. Oh, I did have an honorable mention. Dark Crimes. That Jim Carrey movie where he's like a detective trying to solve a murder or something.
I don't know if I saw that.
It's not even like, it wasn't even like a horrible movie. It was a little predictable in some spots, but more than anything, it has Jim Carrey's O face in it, and I just can't watch it again.
Yeah, that
that's sound, all
that does sound kind of terrible.
Yep.
But tune in for next episode, because we got another good one coming.
Yeah.
And tune in North Dakota and what was the other? Delaware and North Dakota. Tune in later.